Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
We are talking about the strong black lead promo from Netflix, the origins of the iconic imagery, the star power that cannot be denied, and some of the clapback that followed.
And all good things must come to an end. I will review the Sense8 series finale and keep it together emotionally.
Plus, the big sell right now on Inside Pop.
What's up? I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and this is Inside Pop, your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture.
And this week, we're going to talk about some black excellence. Black excellence with a capital B and a capital E. We're talking about the strong black lead promo that aired during the BET Awards and took Twitter and the internet by storm. It featured 47 African-American people involved in Netflix shows, creators like Ava DuVernay and Justin Simien, actors like a whole slew of people, Mike Coulter, Laverne Cox, and so forth and so on. And it was just this gorgeous, beautifully shot, stirring imagery of black excellence, of the black people involved in Netflix programming. And then, obviously, it was created by Netflix to, I'm going to say, brag about how they have highlighted African-Americans in starring roles as well as in creator roles. But I think, in my opinion, this promo, this commercial says even more. It goes beyond, look at what Netflix is doing. And so I'd love to talk about that, but I'd love to hear what your reaction is to this strong black lead, A Great Day in Hollywood promo.
I was watching the BET Awards when it came on, and then I think it was like just going into my kitchen, and I was like, ah, wait, what's Ava doing? And what's Spike doing? And then I was like, and then this. And I was like, oh, hold on, rewind. Let me watch this. Let me be like focused on this. What a beautiful, beautiful promo for Netflix. I just was loving all of the melanin I was feeling on this. And I was really inspired, and I was given props to Netflix for putting together a really, really beautifully, you know, visual of all of these talented individuals in one place. I was I immediately went on to like Twitter and Instagram and tried to find more people posting about it. And then obviously, you know, now Strong Black Lead is its own Instagram page, which we now follow. And you know, I was just like, this is smart. This is a revelation in a way. Also, you know, I wonder if other networks could put something together like this and have 47 people of color in one place.
Yeah. I mean, it's partly because Netflix seems to be producing more content than any other network.
That
so
is true.
You would think, like, even by just by sheer numbers, they've got that. But, you know, I'll say that they have some former favorite shows. I don't really watch Orange is the New Black anymore, although I hear it's still great. But Dear White People, obviously Luke Cage, I love. But yeah, I think that, oh, well, Shonda Rhimes wasn't in that, although she has a Netflix deal now too, but I guess she,
she wasn't
around for that. But yeah, I don't think that any other network could actually make a promo that is that powerful. They couldn't pull together 47. Almost all of them were recognizable without hearing their names or hearing what they did. So yeah, I don't think any other network could do that. Amazon couldn't do it. ABC couldn't do it. I don't think HBO could do it, honestly. So
HBO definitely cannot.
Showtime, you know, they've got Lena Waithe also, who is also in this promo. But yeah, so you've got to give props, even though I do see it as a pat on the back, right? They're patting themselves on the back. But the strong, I read that the strong black lead idea was around before this promo. It was started by a group of African American executives at Netflix, and so it's something that did exist, and it was a push to really be specific about the power of African American stories and African American actors and creators. So it's something that did exist before this promo, and I think it will exist beyond the initial excitement and buzz of the promo.
Yeah, I think it will. And I think it was surprising to me because I was like, oh, wow, this is a new direction. But then I went on, like I said, I went on the Instagram page and I was like, oh, they've been doing this for a long time. Like there's tons of posts from this Instagram account, you know, starting. And so I was just like, oh, okay. They've been building this for a little bit, which is smart. Yeah. And I think that if the other networks wanted to pool together all minorities, they might be able to put something like this together, you know, like if they include Latinas and my South Asians, there may be something similar that another network could do. But I think the way that they did this and to dive deeper into the photo that they were recreating, it has a definitely more symbolic meaning.
Yeah, just to give people a little bit of history. So there's this amazing photograph taken by a photographer, Art Kane, in 1958. And he was freelance working for Esquire magazine. And he took this photo of, I think it was 57 jazz musicians. So this is up in Harlem on a Harlem brownstone stoop, which looks very similar to the stoop on a back lot in Universal Studios that they took this current Netflix picture. People like Sonny Rollins, Thelonious Monk, historic jazz greats, and then a whole bunch of little kids sitting on the curb. I don't know who let those kids in.
But, oh, I love that part, though.
I guess it adds to the picture. But so I love that connection to history, too. It wasn't just about look at all these great black people on a Universal backlot, but look, we are emulating this iconic photo that also celebrated black creativity and black creators. So I love that. Love, love, love that tie. And we'll put a link to the photo in our show notes because everyone should know that photo and see it. And it's fun in any group photo like this to play, you know, where's Black Waldo in this case, and like find out, oh, where's Sonny Rollins? Oh, there he is. And, you know, and can we just say that jazz musicians in the 50s are the best dressed. Like everyone is so stylish. They're wearing suits and ties and cool ass sunglasses and berets. Who's more stylish than a jazz musician from the 50s?
Caleb McLaughlin in this promo? I'm sorry.
Now you have to tell me who's Caleb McLaughlin because I don't recognize that name.
Sean David Johnson. He is your younger self, Lucas from Stranger Things.
Oh. I'm sorry. You know what? I didn't know his real name.
Wow,
listeners know how much I love Lucas. I love, love, love his attitude.
And he narrates this promo, which I loved.
Yeah.
It has this great idea of, you know, a new generation being able to kind of spread this message, which I really, really enjoyed as well. I definitely want to touch upon like a little bit of the controversy that came out after this promo debuted. So the promo debuted on Sunday during the BET Awards. A couple days before that, a PR executive, a top PR executive, was let go for using the N-word on several occasions in front of some staff at Netflix. And he had been let go for, quote unquote, unacceptably low racial awareness and sensitivity. People wanted to connect the two of these things, saying, oh, you know, Netflix is trying to like course correct and put out this strong black lead promo, you know, right after they had let go their top PR exec. Guys, this stuff gets created at least a couple months in advance. These things are shot ahead of time. There's no way that all of these actors could get in one place in a day and shoot this and edit it and put it together to air on the BET Awards. So let's not make that correlation, okay? I actually did read a couple articles saying that they actually did debate whether to move forward with airing the spot because they just didn't want to possibly have that connection made in some way that they were trying to kind of to soften this controversy that's going on in their company and the firing of that executive. But I think they had found out, somebody said it'd be wrong to erase the work of so many people of color due to that executive's actions. And so they decided to continue with the spot on Sunday. And I think that was a great idea.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, again, this was spearheaded by black executives who were working to be positive, working to change Hollywood, to improve it. And so, yeah, you're not going to let one racist, and I'll call him a racist because, and I understand that Netflix had to use very diplomatic wording, like fired for intense racial insensitivity, Or you could say he was a racist, right? Anyone who consistently, any white person who consistently uses the N-word when he's in a position of power like that is acting racist.
Yeah.
That's my little, yeah. So, I, the other thing I wanted to mention is it's, and it's something that actually I heard Lena Waithe talk about when I saw her about 2 weeks ago at the Producers Guild Produced By Conference in LA. She was on a panel with Justin Simien. Actually, it was my dream panel. Justin Simien, Lena Waithe, Dan Bukatinski, and those are my three faves on the panel because they've all created stuff that I love so much. And Dan Bukatinski, the comeback specifically, Lena Waithe, we know her great work. We've talked about it a lot. And Justin Simien of Dear White People. And one thing that Lena Waithe said is, you know, it's great that I'm sitting up here, that Justin's sitting up here, but don't forget that, you know, how many black executives who are really calling the shots are at Netflix. There are some. Two high-ranking Netflix executives did leave earlier this year. You know, no place is perfect. Netflix isn't perfect. Hollywood sure isn't perfect. And I like it when someone like Lena Waithe says, "I've worked hard to get here. I want all of you people to join me up here and be amazing black creators and people of color creators and queer creators and ally creators. But don't forget where you're still not really in power, right?" Like, it's great that Lena Waithe is at Netflix, probably hiring lots of people who deserve to be hired by her, who are talented and who are people of color, etc. But there's still a long way to go. Because what if there was a Netflix, and I don't want to be like a Debbie Downer, but I think the reality is, what if there was a Netflix promo that just featured all of their executives? What would that promo look like?
Oh wow, good question. Good question. Yeah. That's or any network for that case. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good wake-up call from Lena. She's keeping it real, for sure.
Always. I think she always
Always
does.
does, yes.
But I want to just be positive and I want to shout out the photographer and the director of the spot. So there's the great photograph that exists, and that was photographed by a photographer named Kwaku Alston, and then Lacey Duke, who's directed some Janelle Monáe videos and some Saint Beauty videos. She directed the spot. So shout out to those two great black creators.
Yes. Congratulations. Job well done. We will have more after this very short message.
The Greatest Discovery is a podcast about Star Trek Discovery and so much more, Ben.
We watched the entire first season of Star Trek Discovery, but now we're finding all kinds of interesting ancillary topics to get into.
We're interviewing our favorite people.
Reading comic books.
And we're updating you on the news about season two of Star Trek Discovery.
It's news you can use, and it's every 2 weeks on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
Amita, it's happened before. I've had to say goodbye to the Fishers, to Buffy Summers, to the 12 Colonies, Walter White, the employees of Sterling, Cooper, Draper, Price. But saying goodbye to my cluster, Will, Cepheus, Nomi, Kala, Leto, Riley, Sun, and Wolfgang, filled me with a level of anticipation and dread I've never experienced leading up to a series finale before. But so we're talking, of course, about the Sense8 series finale, which popped up on Netflix on June 8th. When did I watch it? June 25th. I really was so precious about it. Actually, Amita and I had access, thank you to the good people at Netflix, weeks before June 8th. And I refused to watch it because we actually get screeners, advanced screeners of Netflix programming so that we can review, and we will continue doing that. We'll continue bringing you sneak peeks as we have with Luke Cage and Queer Eye. But I refused to watch because there was a watermark. So basically it's our email address that's watermarked on just a portion of the screen, but I needed the experience to be pristine. And then when it came out to the public, I was traveling throughout California and I didn't want to watch it in a hotel room. I didn't want to watch it on my laptop. So I finally watched it. And before I start talking about it, I want to ask you, have you ever been so precious about a television viewing experience? My guess is you're going to say yes, but I'm curious to hear what. Have you ever been so precious, like you've waited to watch something, risking spoilers, because you just wanted to be in the right space to watch it?
Yeah. It's funny because the way that you were just describing how you didn't want to watch it, it felt like a new version of Green Eggs and Ham. And I just was getting a little giddy about that.
I will not watch Sense8 alone. I want to watch it in my home.
Yes. And yeah, so thank you for that, because that was amazing. So I think the most recent thing I could think of is Game of Thrones, because it was just the last couple seasons was like much must see TV. And sometimes, you know, you're just busy on a Sunday and you aren't able to watch it or whatever. I wouldn't go to my phone and try to watch it like the next morning on the way to work, or just try to like get it in before I get spoiled or before, you know, I want to start diving into it. And just because I'm so hyped about it, I would wait because I would want to see it on my TV and I want to have the experience on my couch.
Yeah.
Watching that show.
Okay. So you're kind of feeling, and I bet a lot of our listeners are feeling what I went through as well.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So listen, so I'm going to say that it really is impossible for me to give this a completely objective review. But I am going to try to make this interesting even for the people who have not watched Sense8. So I'm going to talk about some universal things about series finales. So I think for me, the most interesting thing is if you've read about Sense8, it was canceled after 2 seasons on Netflix. Netflix doesn't release ratings, but we do. You get to kind of figure out how well shows are doing based on how much they trend on Twitter. There are some other algorithms people use. But basically, Sense8 was an incredibly expensive show to make. They traveled around the world multiple times, and a large cast. And it was Lily Wachowski is making it. So there are expensive car chases and elaborate scenes. And it's all amazing to me. But it was too much money for the number of viewers they got. So, but there was such a fan outcry that initially didn't work. They said, thanks for your love, but it's canceled. And then there was this larger wave of fan outcry. And they're like, okay, done. You get a 2.5 hour movie to conclude it. And it really was a case of the fans just demanded it so much that they were able to do it. So I say that it did feel a little bit like fan fiction sometimes, because it was definitely for the fans. It basically gave me everything I wanted, right? Did I get a couple of amazing fight scenes? Yes. Did I get a couple of amazing scenes where the Sense8s inhabit each other's bodies to help each other out of hot messes? Yes. Did I get a Sense8 orgy to end all Sense8 orgies? Oh, no, I'm not getting that. Oh, yes, you are, in the very last scene. So the best thing I'm going to say about Sense8 is, you know, so we know how Sopranos ended, right? Cut to black. People got confused and upset. You know, like there are a lot of kind of famous last endings. The Buffy series finale ended with that amazing moment where Willow says, where I think Faith says to Buffy, so they basically vanquished evil, and Buffy wasn't the only Slayer. Spoiler alert. And so, Buffy, what are you going to do now? Yeah, you're not the only Slayer. No more evil to fight. So what are you going to do? And she just cracks this slight little smile, and the camera pushes in, and cut to black. The Sense8 series ends with a beautifully shot, super erotic, 4-minute Sense8 orgy, where all of the individual Sense8s have their partner or partners, and, you know, it all kind of crescendos into probably the most intense Sense8 orgy out of the 2 seasons of Sense8. So so it basically gave fans everything they wanted, and it was satisfying on that level. I don't think it will be nominated for any kind of Emmys, because it really was just for the fans. And I guess you could debate, you know, is that great TV making? And I think my response would be, and Lily Wachowski's response would be, you know what? I didn't make this one for the critics. I didn't make this one to get new viewers. I really made this for the fans. I tried to make it full of quality and surprise and nuance, but it's for the fans. No one else needs to enjoy it or like it. So that's kind of my takeaway from the Sense8 series finale.
Was there anything? I'm glad that you were satisfied with it. Sorry. But I have so many questions. Was there anything that you felt they missed? Like, did you feel like there was closure on almost every character, or at least a sense of closure? Or did you feel like there was something missing?
That's such a great question, because there are 8 main characters, and over 26, 27 episodes, you really got to know and care and get backstories about all 8 of them. And I would say that the character of Leto, who is the formerly closeted but now out and proud, super hot, gay. Super hot is redundant because all 8 of them are super hot. But he's the he's from Mexico City. He's a Mexican actor. And he was essentially treated as comic relief, which he has been in other episodes, but you never really got closure on his character. I think you just assume that, okay, he's with his beautiful boyfriend, Hernando, and their kind of third partner, Danielle, and they're going to live their happy life, and he's going to get roles and be an out and proud actor. But you didn't really get a lot of him. And also Riley, the Icelandic DJ, you didn't get a lot of her. But it's interesting, they did spend some extra time on a couple of the Sense8's romantic partners. So Kala, actually, I won't go into detail, but her husband, and you were never sure if she wanted to be with him or not, you actually got a significant amount of time with him. But, you know, I would say for the most part, but not fully. And then I would say also say my other criticism is that it did get a little bit bogged down in mythology, right? Like just who the Sense8s are and why there is an organization against them and what side. Naveen Andrews is also a Sense8. He's not part of the main cluster, but you were never sure. Is he good? Is he bad? Can he be trusted? So there was a lot of dense mythology, kind of like Lost. And it was such an information dump at the in that episode that I literally don't quite understand all of it, and I'll probably have to watch it again, or read a Wikipedia page. So I would say that felt a little bit rushed as well. But it also makes me wonder, and I think you're kind of like me in that we are drawn to these shows that have mythologies, right? Like we loved Lost, and we all complained about that series finale, but I have to say, but Sean, you were like on that ride the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, so I wish the mythology had been a little bit less dense, or at least a little bit more clearly spelled out, but you know, but then it's like a puzzle. You get to really go back and really try to decipher it. And I'm sure if you did kind of make a chart and read the screenplay, it would all make sense. I feel like, you know, listen, remember how people criticized The Matrix as well for just being like the last part of The Matrix? It was just all about philosophy and this and that. I mean, it's, you know, it's the Wachowskis being consistent. So with what they believe and what they want to say.
Yeah. And I think, would you say maybe that as much as they were canceled but brought back as a creator, I'm sure they already, you know, once they're doing season 2, they probably were plotting out season 3 with the hopes of getting picked up, you know, and then that didn't happen. But maybe they wanted to try to condense a lot of what the thoughts they put together, the storylines that they may have started to chart out in a third season, to kind of jam it into 2.5 hours. Is you think maybe some of that has something to do with the density that you felt?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they really wanted to give all the answers and complete storylines and make it all make sense for us. Yeah, and they had to jam it into 2.5 hours. You know, but then they also took, I think, 20 minutes towards the end for a wedding. and which was nice. I feel like that the show is all about, I joke a lot about the orgies, but the show is like, it's so sincere. It's so positive. I mean, it's just like about universal love, right? Like they took 20 minutes of their series finale for a wedding ceremony. Because I feel like that's what she really cares about. She cares about love, and she cares about, you know, whether it's trans people or queer people or a Mexican or an Indian, or she really, really wants, I think the show is all about, you know, love everyone. And what if you were able to step into someone's shoes literally? Right.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Right. And like the and actually ending with the orgy, I really feel like that was a bold way of saying, again, this is what the show is about. What if we all just loved each other? Right. And what if we like kind of took down labels? Right. Like what, you're a straight guy. Right. But what if there's someone who you love and you have this amazing connection to who's also another guy? Like what if you just kind of let go of all of these labels and definitions and limits, right? The world would be a pretty sexy place.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Beautiful place as well. So I think that's what she tried to say for 2.5 seasons. And and I think that's what she successfully did. She and all of the actors and all the creators. One more thing, shout out to one of my favorite living writers, David Mitchell, is this British writer. He wrote Cloud Atlas. He wrote The Bone Clocks. Like three other novels of his I love. He was a co-screenwriter of the Sense8 series finale, which makes so sense because he's also like mythology and really smart writing. So I was so excited to see his name in the credits. Aww. I really want to have dinner with Lily Wachowski and David Mitchell and just make them talk to me for 2 hours about.
Hey, listen, put it out on the podcast. You never know. Maybe you're listening, guys.
But thank you all for listening to me talk about what is going to go down as one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, it made your list. Yeah. It made your top 10 list. Our very first year, I remember you raving about this show. And it's hard. It's hard to say goodbye to a show that you love so much, you know?
Yes, thank you for being there for me, Amita. I appreciate your support.
I try. I mean, I could be more supportive if I actually watched the series, which I keep telling you, it's on my list.
One day we'll be away together. Maybe someday soon, actually. But maybe we'll have like a lot of time. And I'll be like, Amita, do you want to watch an episode of Sense8? And you'll say, yeah, if you watch an episode of This Is Us. And then it'll just be a big kumbaya pop culture moment where we'll share each other's favorite shows.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Done. All right. Well, the show's not over yet because, of course, we have the big sell coming up after this very short message.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
Now it's time for the big sell. Sean, I feel like you might want to do a Sense8 themed big sell description.
Oh, this is spontaneous.
I know, and I love it.
Well, like Sense8, the big sell really is about stepping into someone else's shoes. I do actually like to think of Amita as part of my cluster. And you know what, listeners? I think of y'all, all of y'all, as a big, giant cluster where we do experience what the other one is listening to, what the other one is watching. And we really just try to share that and be sincere and authentic about our sharing of said pop culture. So yes, Amita, revelation, epiphany, the Big Cell is just like Sensate.
Yay.
It's also when I recommend something from pop culture to Amita or vice versa, and then we come back the next week and tell the other what we think of it.
Yes. I love that.
Revelation. So last week, oh yeah, so last week I big sold something to you.
Yes, you did. I was waiting for you to describe it.
Oh yeah, sorry. So last week I sold, sometimes it's music, sometimes it's TV or movies, but it's sometimes it's something to read. So I big sold Amita an article about, well, it's actually about a lot. Specifically, it was about the cyberbullying of one of the stars of The Last Jedi, but it's basically just all about the kind of the culture of intense fandom and mm-hmm. how it can be toxic at times. So I'd love, very interested to hear what you thought about the article and just the issue in general.
Yeah, you know, thank you for selling this article to me. I definitely didn't see it. It was on the Vulture site, which we both enjoy, but I didn't get a chance to read this when it came out. So I appreciate you selling it. It is written by Abraham Reisman, and what an incredible writer he is, first of all. I just appreciated the intellectual and deep writing of this this article. I would actually just say it's an essay, because it's extremely intelligent and extremely thoughtful with how he dove into himself as a fan of sci-fi and going to, you know, comic cons, and you know, where he comes from as a fan of pop culture and specifically Star Wars, and how he kind of interpreted some of the bullying that comes around with this latest iteration of Star Wars, which you know, I guess it just wasn't on my radar as much to hear about all of the vitriol about casting a multi-ethnic cast. I think
how dare they.
I know. One, I say how dare they. Two, I am kind of glad that I didn't hear too much about that, because it would have incensed me quite a bit. But I do feel like what he said was, to sum it all up, he was just like, you know what, if you guys want to criticize Star Wars, then, you know, that's on you to do that. I think maybe it's better to create brand new series and sci-fi worlds that have a multi-ethnic cast if these people can't see outside of what Star Wars had started in, which was predominantly white. Then let's go outside the box. Let's create new stories. You know, and I appreciated his thought on this, because it was more of just like he could sit there and defend, you know, the casting of John Boyega and Kelly Marie Tran and Daisy Ridley as a female lead. Yep. He could continue to defend that all he wanted to, but he wanted to try to provide a solution and a suggestion to just being like, you know, ignore those bullies, move forward, you know, create different. And I appreciated that about the article.
Yeah, I think, gosh, there's so much to say. And we've talked about this a lot, but I think that, you know, one thing that I've said before is I, as a little kid, could not have been more invested in Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker. It was impossible for me to like Harrison Ford's Han Solo more than I did, right? I was a young black kid invested beyond any reason in these white characters and these white actors. Why is it so scary for some people to see themselves beyond the obvious, right?
Yeah.
See yourself in John Boyega's character. See yourself, you know, if you're a white male, see yourself in Daisy Ridley's character.
Right.
Or don't see yourself. Just see a really interesting character and be happy for people who aren't like you, who are getting to see themselves. I don't understand, like, that lack of evolution in the brains of these assholes. So
yeah, 100% agree. It's a lack of evolution is a perfect way of saying it.
Yeah, y'all are Neanderthals, or maybe Homo erectus, I'm not sure, but one of those two. Yeah, so I'm glad you enjoyed it. I mean, I think it's good. I mean, I love, you know, I love pop culture writing that can go deep and really talk about how pop culture echoes things going on in larger society, good and bad, unfortunately, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so awesome. Well, what would you like to rate Mr. Reisman's article?
I would rate his article, it's a 3.25.
Love it.
Yeah. I think, love like it. I said, I really thought that he was a very thoughtful writer, and I really, really enjoyed reading that.
Right on. Right on. Well, what do you have to big sell to me this week?
I am big selling this cool Vimeo video that I came across, and I can't remember how I came across it. It's so funny, but it's such a cool concept, and I thought it's actually appropriate to discuss in the same episode as your goodbye to Sense8, as it is this creator. I guess he's an editor. I'm not sure, but either way, he's really smart, and his name is Jacob T. Swinney. And he decided to put together a montage of the first and final frames of a whole slew of movies. And his thought process is, what can we learn by examining only the first and final shot of a film? So this video plays the opening and closing shots of 55 films side by side. And some of them are similar, some of them are different. You know, it just, it's really cool to see these side by side with films like Birdman and Black Swan and Taxi Driver, you know, 12 Years a Slave, Godfather Wow. Part 2. There's a lot of recent, but there's some older ones, you know, No Country for Old Men. So there's a whole bunch in here. There are a lot of fantastically talented directors, award-winning films on this as well. So I thought this would be a cool video to share.
I appreciate this so much. I love those type of montages.
Yeah,
I mean,
me
I know
too.
A lot of people complain when they watch the Oscars, too many montages. No, not enough. Give me more montages. So I love a good montage, and I'm here for it. Here for it. So I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, it makes you think differently about some of these films, and also appreciate them more when you see how some of these first and final frames can be connected, you know, and how they maybe have been even thought out more than you ever thought they were.
I love that. Oh, thank you for big selling. I think I'm already going to like it. I'm looking into the future and I see a high rating, but let's see.
Okay.
Time will tell. And then speaking of time, we are out of it.
Aww.
But and speaking of time, you'll get my review of this most likely wonderful big sell in 2 weeks. We are off next week for the 4th of July holiday, shooting off fireworks. I don't know what else we'll be doing.
Barbecuing
on the 4th of July.
Eating
yes,
hot
BBQing.
Dogs. Murka. Celebration, y'all.
Celebration. So we want, but we will be back in 2 weeks with more amazing pop culture and my big sell review. And what else, Amita?
Well, you could stay in touch with us until then. That's what you should do. Let us know what you're enjoying in pop culture. Let us know if you've watched the series finale of Sense8, and you can share in Sean Johnson's joy and sorrow about the end of one of his favorite shows. And also just let us know what you're enjoying in pop culture. So you know where to do this, guys. Twitter, Instagram, at Pop Insiders. Head over to Facebook, write a comment, give us a like, and of course, go to InsidePopPodcast.com to find out more about us and subscribe.
And if you are craving some type of new episode next week when we are off, you know what? You can hop over to the Maximum Fun website. We are part of that wonderful podcast network, and there are plenty of other podcasts that you could check out. Of course, we will always remain your favorite, but feel free to check out some of the others there. I'm so competitive.
Please. We will always remain your favorite.
Okay? Should that be our tagline?
All right. Well, have a great week. Have a great holiday, guys.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.